If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
It's not every day we have a guest on who saves rhinoceros, and that is exactly what she guards them. Joan Coletta is the founder of the Creative Conservancy and former senior director of global brands at McDonald's. She is a distinguished marketing leader with a proven track record of driving transformative change and growth to the world's most iconic brands. And then she landed in Chicago at Chicago Animal Care and Control as a commissioner, a regular contributor to the creative industry. Joan has been a speaker at the Cannes Lions International Festival of Creativity, a juror for many top global creative award shows. She's not here to talk about that. She's here to talk about saving the rhinoceros, meeting gorillas in Africa face to face. And here she is. They should do like a superpower movie about you, saving all these animals. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Well, I think it would be, it is a great idea, but not about me, about the real heroes on the front lines. And actually, there just was one on Netflix that launched 2 days ago.
What's that?
A Gorilla Story, and it's narrated by David Attenborough. It's amazing if anyone hasn't seen it, but it talks about the gorillas in Rwanda and where Diane Fossey was, where mm-hmm. I've been able to visit. And it's like you're actually there. So.
All right. So what led you to... First of all, let's talk about the rhinoceros.
Sure.
Yeah. So what led you to hop on an airplane, go to Africa? I don't know. Was it South Africa?
It was South Africa.
Yeah. And then guard the rhinoceros. Well, that's not exactly what you did, but...
No, but I was with people who guarded them. But first, I want to say thank you for having me on your program. It's an absolute honor and pleasure, and I really appreciate it. And I didn't just land in Chicago. I'm a lifelong Chicagoan.
Yeah.
I am a lifelong animal lover. And so, yes, what got me to South Africa was that I've been fortunate enough to been able to go to, I called it my animal quest. So throughout my life, I've made it a point to spend time with animals in the wild. And I always was able to do that, but as a tourist. And it was amazing, of course. But I always left feeling like I really wanted to stay and help the people that are there on the front lines and really be behind the scenes, helping out. And you can't do that if you're there for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I left McDonald's, I had some time and I wanted to put my life in balance and spend time on my other passion. One of my passions is what I do, which is marketing. And it's really about understanding people better so that I can help brands better serve them better. That is human behavior, understanding human behavior is one of my passions. And the other one is animal behavior.
Which I love.
Yes, I think it might be something we share in common, one of the many things.
Indeed.
And so I called it my animal sabbatical, and I focused my life on doubling down on my commitment to animals in two big ways. And the first one was doing volunteer work in South Africa for rhino conservation. And the other one is animal care and control. I'm a commissioner, and that's how we've gotten to know each other, and I'm sure we'll talk a bit about that. So back to rhinos.
Yeah.
Why rhinos? It's where the help was needed the most. And
explain the story, because some people, we can't assume that people know.
No.
So there are various species of the rhinoceros all over the planet, or in parts of the planet, and they are disappearing. And some, like the Javan rhino, the Sumatran rhino, I don't know literally if there are more than a handful of Javan rhinos left. Sumatran rhino, not much better than that. The white rhino and black rhino we know from Africa, they are disappearing fast. Explain why.
Well, you are correct about fast. A rhino is poached every 15 to 24 hours. We lose one rhino. And it's decimated.
But they don't reproduce as fast.
Well, they have longer gestation periods. I knew the facts. It's 3% of the species is remaining. The reason why is it's all driven by a marketing myth. And maybe that's why I have a particular affinity to it. It is a story that has been told for centuries that there is some magical potency in a rhino horn. And it is completely false. Rhino horn is made up of the exact same material as our hair. It's keratin, our nails. But it's the story that's given it value, and it's unbelievable value. Per ounce, it is worth more than gold or cocaine. And again, all driven by a story. And so it's big business. A lot of people, and I didn't know this until I was really there, it's not just a local problem. It is driven by big money syndicates. And it is very organized crime. And so there's a lot of money behind it.
And violent.
And a lot of violence behind it. And so the people that are there are truly heroes and risking their lives. So what I knew were the facts. What I didn't know, there were a couple things I didn't know when I got there. The first one was, and I'm not going to get into details for the sake of your viewers, but it's actually one of the worst situations of animal cruelty I ever have seen in my life. It's how the animals are killed for their horns, and then also the babies they leave behind left to die. So the babies are with their moms for about 3 years. They're very attached to their moms, and if they don't have their moms to take care of them, they can't make it. And so that's one thing, is I just didn't know how horrible the situation was in the cruelty. And the second thing is, what amazing, sentient, lovable animals they are. They know their names. They come when they're called. If you dig them a mud wallow and they get to go in it when it's nice and hot, they get the zoomies. They love to play. The white rhinos form friendship groups. They have very distinct personalities. They have their friends. I mean, they are just incredible animals. They really reminded me of my dogs. And I don't think most people know that. I know
they're slightly larger than a Saint Bernard. The white rhino you're talking about. Black rhinos can be a bit more temperamental.
Right.
Have you ever been charged by a rhino?
I've never been charged by a rhino. But one of the places I volunteered, which is absolutely amazing, it was actually the first ever orphanage that was created to try to get expertise to save these babies that were getting abandoned because of the poaching crisis.
Then would the idea be to
rewild them, and that's what they're doing successfully.
Except then they're threatened. But there are people out there that actually protect them
big time
with their lives.
Big time. And we could talk. We want to talk about that, or should I talk? So yes, it is a very it's a dangerous job. So rhino orphanage. Bottle feeding baby rhinos was the first thing
that?
I did.
Nice.
I did, and I woke up in the middle of the night happily to do that. And then rewild
why in the middle
them.
Of the night?
Babies need to eat, and they need to eat at regular intervals, and they have to eat very specific formula. And that they've developed a real science to how to help these babies thrive, and then go out and live healthy lives as rewilded rhinos. So your question was, did I ever get charged? Well, technically, I wouldn't say charge, but one of the things I was able to do with the rewild, the animals that were back in the wild, is we would go check on them out in the bush. And to entice them, we'd give them hay and some pellets, which were vitamins for them. And they really liked their hay and vitamins, but they didn't always need them every time. And so they'd hear us coming in the pickup truck, and they'd come out, and they'd be ready. And I'll never forget... one time we passed up a very hungry rhino who wanted her hay. And in the back mirror of the pickup truck, I felt so bad because she was just chasing after us as fast as she could. Not because she was charging us, but she really wanted those. So we did stop and give her some hay because it was just too hard to resist. So
I was once charged by a black rhino.
Were you really?
Yeah, yeah. They don't see very well. So
no.
I don't know that this rhino really meant to do any harm. It just smelled something that it wasn't familiar with. And by the way, smelling humans, for rhinos that have been persecuted, they will charge and ask questions later.
Yes.
Sometimes, particularly black rhinos more than the white rhinos.
Right.
Now,
as solitary, and by the way, as they should.
Yeah. Well, and they, in the wild, as adults, they don't have much to worry about. Although, wild dogs on occasion... or lions on occasion.
Yeah, but humans by far. Not even any comparison. You asked about guarding.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
Did you do that too?
Well, so
you're not that tall.
Let me be clear. I was there on both fronts, whether it was at the orphanage or whether it was at a reserve that was open to Kruger. And so the good news is it has one of the highest rhino populations.
Mm-hmm.
The bad news is those rhinos need to be protected. So it's a private reserve, and it costs unbelievable amount of money for these people who own these private reserves to have protection. But yes, I was there with probably the most knowledgeable conservationist I've ever met, and I was able to learn from him. But I spend a lot of time with him and his super amazing dog, Letta, anti-poaching dog, and he was part of
What's an anti-poaching dog? We're going to find out. We'll find out when we come back. And some questions people are asking via text, 312-981-7200. We'll do that with Joan Coletta on WGN.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
I think you see them really at pet stores, gorillas. I hope not anyway. Joan Coletta's here, and we are talking about her wildlife experiences in Africa. We're going into Africa with Joan. We were talking about the rhinoceros, and when we came to break, we were talking about what exactly? Do you remember, Joan?
We were talking about the anti-poaching dogs.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
So what are anti-poaching dogs?
They're highly trained dogs that are able to help with anti-poaching. So basically, they tend to be Belgian Malinois, and they have incredible noses. And what they can do is they can sniff out drugs, people, rhinos, rhino poop, and they can track at amazing distances. So I was in the middle of a scare for poaching. We heard what we thought was a gunshot, and it was amazing. Pretty quickly, I was surrounded by the team and their dogs. And what they do is they basically go on the trail to try to see if they can find that there's a person out there, because you're in the bush, so you use drones, but you also, the best is actually on foot being able to find them. So they will go out and they will either find the people or find the whatever it is, and they hold the, if they say they find a bullet, they stay there with the bullet until the authorities arrive so that it can be used in the case for.
And do they really prosecute?
They do start prosecution. You know, it's tough.
And do they catch the bad guys?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. The court cases take a long time. There's a lot of people helping with court advocacy so that the cases are seen through all the way. Yes, I would say that they do have a lot of success. But again, it's the people on the front lines, as you said, are really risking their lives. The dog that I knew had been shot at, also attacked by a lion, but you would never know it. The happiest dog with the best relationship with her owner, you would at the home, you'd think she was a family dog, but she was out there and doing her thing with the other heroes.
Couple of text questions for you.
Yep.
How much education is going toward preventing rhino poaching and the truth behind the rhino horn? You talked about the truth behind it. It's just made of keratin, same thing our fingernails and hair is composed of. But do these people that are the recipients paying for the, if there's no demand, I presume, then there would not be nearly as much of this. So are people being educated about the demand? I mean, what they're really getting, and do they care if they are?
Well, I think it's a fight that needs to be fought on multiple fronts, and education is certainly one of them, and it is happening. But I would say that at this rate, the rhinos won't be here by the time we change centuries of perception. Mm. There's a great documentary. It's very upsetting, so bring your tissues. It's on Amazon, and it's called Stroop, STROOP. But in it, it showed an end user, and someone who had been given the gift of rhino horn to help with her illness. And they showed she had no idea at what had gone into it. To her, it was a product. And I think that's a huge opportunity, is just spreading awareness. A big thing, if anyone's listening and interested, is just learning about it, spreading awareness. There are some amazing organizations. TheRhinoOrphanage.com is one I highly recommend. Save the Rhino has a lot of great information. And if you have the means, and it is expensive, I know, but being able to
travel. That's my next question.
Yeah.
So people want to know, how do I do what you did?
You check out the African Conservation Experience for volunteering. But even any trip, if you're going on safari, that money tends to go to the local communities, and a percentage is going to fight and help with conservation. And so those are a couple good organizations. So
do you feel like you made a difference?
I do.
Are you going to go back?
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot. All I do is think about going back. That's the problem with Africa. I feel like it's the world the way it was meant to be, animals in the wild doing their animal thing. I said the first time I went, it was going to be once in a lifetime, and it's all I can do. I've oriented my life to be able to get back.
Really?
There. Yes.
That is a cool thing. Well, you've done other things, too, in Africa. One is take a walk, just a walk around the corner to see gorillas. Tell me about that.
Rwanda gorillas. I think that's probably the most meaningful experiences I've ever had with animals in the wild. I was lucky enough to be on that same mountain where Diane Fossey did her work, where the now Diane Fossey Ellen DeGeneres Research Institute is. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, David Attenborough just did a documentary on that area. And he had this, he opened the whole show with a quote, and I couldn't do it any better than him, but it was basically to the effect of, like, he felt an especially deep connection when he looked at them, not because of their size, not because of their power, but because the way they look at you and the intelligence and the connection mm-hmm. that you're having when you're looking into their eyes.
Well, and, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So what is the experience like when you see, and you know, I've done that as well. So when you go to see mountain gorillas and you track through the forest, they know where the gorillas are going to be, more or less. And when you get there, tell me what happens.
Did you tell them how hard it is to get there?
Sometimes it is.
Oh, I have a permanent scar on my knee. I am not an adventurous person. I do adventurous things to see animals.
So they're mountain gorillas
who live
in the mountains.
And they actually don't come to you. You have to trek to go see them.
Yep.
So there are, as you said, those trackers go out early to find where they slept and when they're starting to get moving. And then it could be 30 minutes to trek to get them, but not usually. Then it could be hours. And 6 inches of mud, and you're climbing up vines, and you have people helping you get up there.
Yeah.
And it's painful, and it's sweaty, and all the things, but the minute you see them, it's just everything stops. I say seeing chimpanzees is kind of like being on the floor of the stock exchange. It's chaos. It's political. There's noise. And I feel
well
like the energy when you're with gorillas, it's like a spa, and you're just able to really observe them and how they connect with each other, how they take care of each other. It's like watching the ladies over there spilling tea with each other, their friends, watching the alpha male and the kids all jumping on his back, and it's like a daycare that he's running, and he's just kind of quiet and watching them. And then you can have the baby gorillas right in front of you. And by the way, we should say, they have chimpanzees, gorillas, they share so much of our DNA. We have to wear masks and we have to make sure we don't get too close to them. That doesn't mean they can't get too close to you and then you have to try to back up.
Wearing masks, you should explain, is because they can get very sick from things that
catch all of our diseases,
which they have little or no immunity for.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. So our number one job is do no harm and protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're habituated. So they're used to seeing people because they see these trackers day in, day out. They're part of their extended groups. But when you get to see them and you get to sit down and just watch them, it is the most magical experience.
What makes it so magical?
I mean, you're not supposed to look in alphas, males, when you look in the eyes of the others, you just, their awareness, their intelligence, their relationships, it's so clear that they are just these caring, beautiful, intelligent beings. And just again, it's about how they take care of each other, how they work as a group together. And you know, it's just, in some ways, they're better versions of us.
Well put. Did you feel unsafe at any point?
No, not at all. Everyone always asks me this. I think animals are pretty predictable, especially when you're with the incredible experts who know their behaviors. I wouldn't say it was scary, but maybe they felt most unsafe. One time a alpha came down and he sat an inch away from me. I was sitting down and he sat right next to me. And I wanted so badly to you know, reach my hand out, but of course I wouldn't do that. And then the guide and the tracker said, told me, just get up slowly and walk backwards. But no, I was like, my heart was going to burst out of my chest of happiness.
You and I are both on the Commission of Chicago Animal Care and Control, and we've run out of time. Yes, I know. But you do want to say something in 10 seconds?
Oh, my gosh. I wish it was more. Okay, so I can't say enough good things about Chicago Animal Care and Control and the need we have in Chicago, you don't have to go all the way to Africa to help animals. We have a huge need to help and be a part of what's happening there right now. Our mission is to help animal care and control keep more pets in homes and increase adoptions. We're having a unprecedented relinquishment right now of people with their pets. You've talked a lot about it for all kinds of reasons, but there's lots of ways that people can help the amazing heroes that are already at Animal Care and Control, whether that's the staff, the volunteers, our rescue partners. And so the ways to get involved, it's first of all, Chicago Animal Care and Control exists. Adopt there. Second thing is that we have an Amazon wish list. We could really use your help for basic supplies. And the third thing is we would love to have you come volunteer, help us walk dogs and cats, take care of cats, help with adoptions.